From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. And this week, this ought to be a fun show. We're going to talk about automobiles or cars and our love affair with cars. Hey, in the U.S., in Kentucky, this part of the country overall, people love their automobiles, and all of us have stories about the cars in our lives, either past, present, maybe even future, for those who are dreaming about the car they would eventually like to have. And so we've gathered a few guests to facilitate our conversation, and we encourage you to get on board and tell us your story. Your story about your favorite car of all time, your first car, maybe the one that got away, a car that you wish you had never gotten rid of. Again, a car that you might like to have. What's your dream car that you never got a chance to have but still might be out there waiting for you and you're still trying to find a way to make that happen? Give us a call at 800-621-8890. Send us an email, as some have done already, to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at wekuest. Or post on our Facebook page. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. And to facilitate our conversation, our guests in the studio are Tom and Connie Jones. Our listeners at WEKU may know them from the past few years of the Concours d'Elegance that occurs at Keeneland. And by way of full disclosure, WEKU is a media sponsor of this event. So if it sounds like we think it's a good idea, the event is a good thing, and of course it's a good cause of promotion and raising funds for Children's Hospital, it's because we really do believe that. This is one opportunity we take to not be very journalistic, so be aware of that fact, that we don't get anything out of it except public service and offering service to our listeners. But we do know Connie and Tom from past years of working with the Keeneland Concours, and we welcome both of you to the studio.
John, thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it greatly.
And Connie, tell us very, very briefly, and we do have another guest, and I'll tell you about the other guest in a moment, but Connie, tell us briefly about the Concours, how that all came about, and how you all have been involved in that.
All right. Well, in 2004, my wonderful husband came to me and said, you know, if you help me with this, then we might be able to have a wonderful event that could benefit Kentucky Children's Hospital. He was approached by the Porsche Club, actually, to start a Concours d'Elegance. And he said, it's not a car show, we'll have a concours. And that was in 2004. And there was a group of automobile enthusiasts that sat around our dining table. And 10, 11 years later, here we are. And we've won a lot of awards for the largest event in the Southeast, so we're really thrilled about that.
And the Concours is something that happens elsewhere. It has a long history, I guess, prior to Lexington, Kentucky?
John, it does. It actually started in Paris in the 20s.
Not Kentucky.
Right.
It's a French version. Oui. Yes. And ultimately, there are two really large ones in the United States. One is out at Pebble Beach, and it's absolutely amazing, and then one at Amelia Island. And there's a few that happen around the center of the country, and we're proud to be involved with this one. I'd also like to take a quick moment to hats off to you and your staff. You guys run a great station. We're always on 88.9. We love everything that you all do.
Well, thank you for that. Again, you know, not being very journalistic about it or objective about it. But Tom and Connie are here, and we'll talk a little more about the Concours as the program goes forward. But this is not a promotion for the Concours. This is our regular weekly show, and we want to get our listeners involved and hear your comments, hear your stories. And I really think this could be a fun show. I've personally been involved in shows before where we had listeners call in and talk about their favorite cars. I know you've got a story out there. I know someone's got something you really want to share with us about that first car. What was so meaningful about that first car in your life? Aside from the freedom that it brought into your life at probably 16 years old or 17, 18, maybe you delayed driving. Tell us a little bit about that and your relationship to automobiles by calling 800-621-8890. What about your favorite car of all time? What about the one that you actually named? Some people name cars. I would never think of doing so, except with a profanity. when something's not right. But we'd like to hear from you with your stories. Again, email them, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at wekuest. Post on Facebook or call 800-621-8890. We'd like to get your comments on the air. Now, oh, by the way, in a few minutes, we will be bringing on board Katie Frasinelli of the Corvette Museum in Bowling Green. A big story, big issue, big tragedy, actually, in Bowling Green earlier this year. The museum is recovering, as we understand it, and we're going to hear a little bit about that in about 10 minutes when we bring Katie Frasinelli on board. She's the Marketing and Communications Director for the museum, so stay with us for that. But meanwhile, here is an email from David. And David writes, I spent much of my childhood in southern Utah growing up in and around the national parks, such as Zion, the Grand Canyon, Bryce Canyon, and others. Needless to say, long road trips and camping all over the deserts of the Southwest were a constant in my childhood. That may be why at the age of 15, when I started thinking about acquiring my first car, I immediately fell in love with an old Volkswagen bus I came across sitting out in the desert in southern Utah. From the moment I first laid eyes on it, I was starry-eyed and had visions of restoring it to its former glory and traveling endlessly throughout the West, camping out of the back of it. The fact that this vehicle was literally already more than twice my age did not deter me. Let's see if I can scan through here. Little did I know the 66 VW bus would take me on a journey I could never have imagined. Let me just see if we can get to the chase here. I believe he did get it restored in January of this year after asking my girlfriend to marry me under the span of Delicate Arch in Arches National Park in southern Utah. We jumped in my old bus and made the 2,000-mile trip to Kentucky, where we bought our first home in Owen County. Fascinating story. Oh, and we have a picture. And we'll be putting this on the WEKU website. Actually, a couple of pictures of this VW bus. It's a classic.
It is classic.
not in the greatest of shape. Looks like it's been out in the desert. But actually, that's the before, and here's the after restored for Connie
Very
and Tom.
Nice.
We'll put
Very
that,
nice.
Put these on our website. David, thank you for writing to us and letting us know about your VW. Did we call those microbuses? Is that what
they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you guys know about VW microbuses? You're not old enough to have known them when they
well,
came
actually,
out, are you?
Growing up in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area in the 60s and 70s, that was the pretty much car de rigueur. I mean, it was very common and a wonderful, you could put all your buddies in there, all your camping gear, that type of thing. And believe it or not, they really have a cult following right now. The 23-window version of those go somewhere north of six figures now at automobile auctions.
23 windows. I never thought about that, but there was a lot of glass.
Yeah, little windows over each top, and they're called 23-window buses.
Interesting story, David. Thanks for that. We're interested in your story about your favorite car, your first car. Talk about the significance of that first car. Most of us started with something that was not exactly the greatest car in the world. I suspect that's still the case with a lot of people who start with something that barely gets them some transportation so they can go to and from high school, maybe some extracurricular activities in their late teens. 800-621-8890, our phone number. Tom and Connie, involved with the Concours d'Elegance, you have all kinds of, not exactly 66 VW microbuses. Talk about the range of cars that you have experienced. And you've had an interest in cars long before starting the Concours, I guess.
Well, growing up in California, for me, it's a car culture. So you're exposed to a bunch of different, maybe the epicenter really of sports car movement and that type of thing. So that probably is what whetted my appetite. I'll let Connie speak for herself, but I was really blessed to marry a gal that had six brothers, and the six brothers were always messing with automobiles. So I lucked into that deal.
Yeah, well, that was six brothers with muscle cars. And so, yes, I grew up working on cars, and my first car was a 1965 Mustang. And that's the car you mentioned earlier that, do you have a car that you wish you still had? That would be the car I wish I still had.
Wow. My first, just to be completely open about it, was a 65 Corvair.
Nice.
Yes. My sister.
Those are great cars.
It was a fun little car.
Sure.
Until the engine started falling out, and I couldn't afford to repair it anymore.
Right.
But I had a great time in that car for 3 or 4 years.
One of the things we really enjoyed doing in high school with Volkswagen Bugs, number one, if there was somebody in the class that we were, you know, wanted to pull a prank on, you can drop a Volkswagen engine in about 5 minutes if you know what you're doing and have a bunch of guys with you.
Wow.
So whenever they show up, and you'd put actually concrete bricks in the car so that it didn't look like the engine was missing. It was still sitting at the correct angle. And it was always just a blast to watch their face when they opened up the trunk to see that the engine was gone. But that's also a great learning motor and a great car to drive in, because you really have to pay attention to what you're driving, how you're driving. It's very, very slow. I forget how many horsepower they have, but we probably all have weed eaters and lawnmowers that have more horsepower than a Volkswagen bus or a Volkswagen bug.
This is Eastern Standard, and again, a very different kind of program this week, a lighthearted midsummer type show, we hope, and we'd like to hear from you about your love affair with the automobiles, your first car, or any other story you want to tell us about an automobile. 800-621-8890. Normally, we don't open the phone lines this early in the show, but we're doing so right now as we go to Kathleen in Winchester. Kathleen, thank you for calling. Go right ahead with your story. We have about 2 minutes for your story.
Hi. I'm originally from Pennsylvania, and I went off to college in 1972. My father had bought my brother a nice car when he went off to college, and I was the second child to go to school, and he bought me a 1968 Cougar that was dark green with a cream color vinyl top and cream color interior. It was just a gorgeous car. I drove it to Philadelphia to go to a Penn State campus there, and drove it for several months, and one night I stepped out of my apartment to go to the laundromat and saw my car being driven away by a car thief.
Oh, no.
And never saw the car again, and it's always been the car that I've loved. And everybody after that got my mother's hand-me-down Crown Victorias to go off to school in. Nothing fancy, just these mom's old cars to take to school. So after mine got stolen.
Well, Kathleen,
always the car I
love. Oh, wow. One can understand why. Yes, that one really did literally get away. Sorry for that happening, Kathleen. That happened
a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a few years ago, but those kind of things stay with us. Thank you for telling us that story. We're really glad to hear from you. This is Eastern Standard. We're talking cars on this week's show, and we're going to get other callers involved in the conversation. We did have a call that came into the voicemail line earlier in the week, or maybe it could have been this morning for all I know. We may or may not actually get a chance to play Stephen's comments. Stephen, was it Winchester, I believe? No, Georgetown, but not a big fan of cars. He chose to get rid of automobiles in his life. We're interested in your story about your relationship with automobiles. In a moment, we're going to talk with Katie Frasinelli of the Corvette Museum about what occurred down there this year and what's going on right now. And we're still interested in hearing from you about cars. 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at wekuest. That number again, 800-621-8890. And the music from Prince gets us into this segment of Eastern Standard for this week. As we bring on to the line Katie Frasinelli, Marketing and Communications Director of the National Corvette Museum in Bowling Green. Katie, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Katie, a big event, a very tragic event occurred at the Corvette Museum in February, I guess it was now. Tell us a little bit about that tragic occurrence and what actually happened.
We had a sinkhole open up in the museum on the morning of February 12th. It was actually the ceiling of a cave that had collapsed under the building. We didn't know the cave was there, but it had apparently been there for thousands of years based on minerals and stuff that they found in it. So when it opened, it took 8 cars with it, and so over a period of a couple of months, they went through a process of stabilizing the building and removing all 8 of the cars. So we now have the cars on display where people can come see them as is and also get an up-close view of the sinkhole.
The cars are on display as is. Are there still plans to send them off to General Motors for refurbishing and restoration?
We know for sure one General Motors is going to fix, and then one of them they'll probably oversee, but beyond that, we're not sure if we're going to be able to fix any of the others. There's just a lot of damage.
Very briefly, the background of the Corvette Museum. How long has it been there? How many cars have you had? What's been the history in terms of interest and people coming through there? I guess you're near a Corvette production plant. Is that correct?
Yes, the Bowling Green Assembly Plant opened in 1981. So Corvette has only been built in one place at a time. The first 1953 Corvettes were built in Flint, Michigan. Then production moved to St. Louis, Missouri from 54 to 81, and then 81 it came to Bowling Green. So they ended up locating a museum here 20 years ago. And the museum is a nonprofit organization. We are not owned or financially supported by General Motors. However, they do loan us cars for display, and they'll send a lot of their designers and engineers to our events to do seminars and just different things like that. They're great to work with. We have typically 70 cars on display in the museum right now, with the Sky Dome being closed for display purposes. We have a little over 50 cars on exhibit, but on campus we have about 110 cars total. Most of the cars that we display are on loan from private individuals and General Motors, but the museum does own about 50 cars that most of them were donated.
So the museum was operating fine. People were coming and going, open hours, I guess, regularly until February 12th. How has this tragic event of the sinkhole changed the museum?
It has been a surprising positive in terms of attendance numbers. We only closed tours the day that the sinkhole happened just to make sure that the building was safe. And then after that, you know, we've been open ever since, and that's when lots of people started coming, wanting to see the sinkhole, hear what happened, see the cars. So we kind of created an exhibit out of it. We weren't really planning on doing that when this first happened, but due to the interest, we thought, you know, why not make lemonade out of it? So have the sinkhole open for viewing and the cars on display through the beginning of September, and then we plan on starting construction to repair the Sky Dome building. As of right now, we are hoping to leave a smaller portion of the sinkhole so that guests for years to come can still have an opportunity of seeing a little bit of what happened.
You got plenty of media coverage of this event, I would imagine. How far and wide, what was the maybe longest distance contact you had for media coverage to do interviews and stories about the museum?
Well, pretty much everywhere covered it. We did have media from Australia and Japan actually come here to film and do stories. And then in terms of, you know, other countries, most of them would pick up video feed and articles, pictures and stuff that had been posted online. We've tried to be very media friendly and be as open and honest about what's going on here, post and share for free videos and photos that they're welcome to reprint and use. And it's seemed to have worked really well. I think having the footage that shows, you know, when the sinkhole happened, people can watch exactly, you know, when it happened. And
oh yeah, you had surveillance cameras operating, right? You have actually video
right.
of that.
Hmm. Yeah, so I think that's what makes it especially unique.
So how safe is the museum, and have you had geologists or other experts take a look at the area now and determine that, you know, there's no problem with going forward with your plans, keeping the museum open? And
we have had geologists and cave and karst specialists here, and we've had structural engineers, geotechnical firms, people that they're the experts at this. Sinkholes are very common in our area. And since this happened, and since we've done all the proper stabilization, we've done microgravity scans of the building and surveying to just monitor it and make sure there's no shifting or anything, I would say that now we are one of the safest places in town because we know exactly what's under the ground.
Katie, thank you for sharing this information with us. In the studio, I have two guests, Tom and Connie Jones, who are the folks behind the Concours d'Elegance that occurs at Keeneland every year. I assume you guys don't know each other, but I don't know if Connie or Tom have questions for you. They are gearheads, car aficionados, and I thought I'd give them an opportunity if they have a question they want to ask.
Katie, we just wanted to thank you for the great work you do down there. We've been down and visit before. It's a wonderful facility for Corvette, wonderful presentation of history, and you all do a great job down there.
Thanks, and we've actually, I think, partnered with you all in the past.
Yes.
Yeah, 'cause you all featured Corvette as your mark a couple of years ago.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Well, Katie, thank you so much. Again, more information, I guess people can get more information about the Corvette Museum online. Why don't you give us the web address and how people can follow up.
CorvetteMuseum.org.
Okay, simple enough. Katie Frasinelli of the Corvette Museum, thank you for being with us, and congratulations on keeping the museum operating and continuing to offer this service to people from all around.
Thank you.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking cars on this week's show. Tom and Connie Jones are still with us. They are the folks behind the Concours d'Elegance. This year's Concours is next weekend, a week. Actually, things kind of get rolling about a week from today, on Thursday of next week.
Yes, that's right. We have the Bourbon Tour on Thursday, 17th, the Hangar Bash on Friday, the day of show, Concours d'Elegance on Saturday, and the Tour d'Elegance on Sunday.
Okay, well, talk a little bit more about the details of this year's Concours, but let's go ahead and go back to the phones and talk to listeners who've called in. Thank you for being patient with us by calling 800-621-8890. Joe from Frankfurt is on the line. Thanks for hanging in there, Joe. Go right ahead.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I wanted to tell you about my first car. It was in the 80s. I was stationed in Hawaii in the Navy, and I was a Honda Civic hatchback, 5-speed manual. I used to drive that thing around for 300 miles on a $5 tank of gas back then.
What year was this Honda Civic?
It was in 1980. I didn't even have a driver's license when I first bought it. I had a pilot's license, but not a driver's license. So I learned to drive in that, and then I sold it when I transferred out of Hawaii. Now I drive a 2000 Volkswagen Passat. It's called Green Monster, and it's got another 196,000 miles on it.
Oh, it sounds like a cousin to my Jetta.
Five-speed manual.
Oh, well, no, mine's one of the fancy ones with an automatic. I'm pushing 200,000 miles myself, and that's something else we'd be interested in hearing from our listeners about the car. What is the one you've driven the longest? I mean, when I was a kid, way back when, and maybe you, it's the same, Joe. I remember people would consider reaching 100,000 miles, like, oh well, you're done. That's it.
Yep.
Was that your experience as well, Joe?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, back then, I think they didn't run past 80,000 to 100,000 miles, but the Honda Civic had 125,000 when I bought it, and I put however many more miles on it, never had a problem with it.
Huh. Tom and Connie, is my perception correct that extended life of cars really came to a great extent from the so-called foreign cars, the Japanese, the German cars that somehow were engineered differently that allowed them to survive longer?
I would agree with both Joe and John on that, in that ultimately they really did produce a product that it was incumbent upon them to engineer better, to maybe style better, and all that kind of stuff. And ultimately, it's Volvos, Hondas, Toyota Camrys, you hear with 300,000 and 400,000 and 500,000 miles on them these days, which is just amazing. I mean, it's a testament to the engineering, and ultimately it's amazing. I'd rather have a car that has some miles on it. You have less problems with that than you do with a car that has virtually no miles on it.
All right. Joe, thank you for your call and being part of today's Eastern Standard.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
800-621-8890 is the number. Actually, Tom and Connie, another question on my mind, it just came to mind, as we talk about people in their first cars, their favorite cars, a long-standing, is it a tradition, custom element of our culture, and I think it's probably something folks here in Central Kentucky can identify with, is the Ford versus Chevy.
There's always brand loyalty, isn't
what,
there?
What is that all about? Is there? I mean, it's like Yankees versus Dodgers.
It
or
is
something.
Exactly right. same deal. And I'm not sure how that got started way back when. You know, Hatfield, McCoys, whatever. I mean, it's a very and people get that adamant about it, don't they? It's very interesting. But people have a tendency to be brand loyal and yes. and that type of thing, and they'll stand up till the bitter end that theirs is better than X. And that's fine. I mean, everybody has a choice. That's a wonderful thing.
It can border on the obscene with the little images yes. that people put on the back windows of their pickup trucks exactly. and so forth. We're talking cars on this week's Eastern Standard. Talk about your favorite, your first car, the car that got away, the one you would love to have. 800-621-8890. We're going to go back to the phone, and let's talk to Larry on line four. Larry from Olin County. With another story of a not necessarily a classic, but an older car. Larry, go right ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I've got a 1969 half-ton Chevy pickup, and I've owned it since 1990. It's my work truck, and I drive into southern Mexico most winters and work down there. I still find parts on stock in the automotive stores in the U.S. and Mexico, so it's pretty reliable, and I'm pretty happy with it.
How many miles do you have on that, Larry?
Well, the truck has more than 500,000. The motor, my last motor I put together was 300,000, or over 300 on my last 256 cylinder that I still isn't burning much oil.
Outstanding.
I have had to do some repair on it, you know.
And this is your is this your primary vehicle?
Yes, sir. It's the only thing I drive.
Wow. So in Olin County, when we see a guy in a 69, this is a Chevy pickup that looks like it has a couple of years on it, that is you.
It's a 67.
67, okay.
Yeah.
All right, Larry, anything else you want to tell us about that truck? Have you owned any other vehicles? I mean, gosh, having a car that from 67, that's almost a lifespan for many people.
Well, I've owned it since 1990. So before that, I had a 64 GMC and found that the older trucks were reliable and they had parts in stock, you know. And so, and traveling in Mexico, it's nice to have something that's easy to fix. And so I've just kind of stuck with them.
Is that something you have, a skill to do repairs on the truck?
Well, living in the countryside, it's pretty good. You know, it helps a person knows how to work on their own vehicles. I've had some good mechanics to mentor me, and of course they're there to help me when I come to the end of my wits with it, because of course sometimes things will happen. But I've had a lot of help, and like I say, it's been more or less, I mean, it's I wouldn't take anything else right now. I think the next thing I'd like is a horse.
That's horsepower of a different kind, isn't it?
Kind of reliable also.
All right, Larry, thank you so much for your call to this week's Eastern Standard. Our phone number, 800-621-8890. We are talking cars. In a few minutes, we'll talk a little more about the Keeneland Concours d'Elegance that Tom and Connie Jones are involved in, and a little bit of the background and a little bit of what goes on there, and how it is used as a fundraiser for a good cause in our region. But we'd like to hear from you with your story about your cars, your favorite cars, your first car, a car that has had some meaning in your life. Anyone out there have named their cars? Any interesting car names that you can share on the radio, of course? 800-621-8890. Let's talk to Royce from Northern Jessamine. Royce, go right ahead.
Yes, my name is Royce, and thank you for taking my call. My first car was a 62 Rambler Classic. It was in poor shape when we bought it, or my father bought it to teach us how to drive. And we refurbished it, reupholstered it, repainted it. And my daddy was obviously proud of his son's luck with the ladies. The seats reclined, both of them had split bench seat. And well, you can do the rest of that math.
Yeah. I mean, now, Ramblers had a reputation, did they not, as I recall? And that's, I guess that's, you know, that, were they, some thought they
were
not reliable?
It was American Motors engine, and I don't know why the company ultimately failed, but I loved that vehicle. That was my favorite car. I wished I could buy another one. Right now, I drive a Toyota Dually with a dump truck bed on it. building an RV in the back of it so I can take it camping and stuff. I'm disabled, so I just do it for gardening and stuff. But that Rambler Classic, that was just a wonderful car.
Mm-hmm. Tom and Connie, of course, work with these fancy, very expensive cars, million-dollar vehicles to a great extent that show up for the Concours d'Elegance. When you talk about something like a Rambler, Tom, what's your thought about that?
Well, but I appreciate the perception on that, and yes, there are quite a few cars like that, but you know what? I wouldn't be surprised, Royce, if there wasn't a Rambler Classic on the field. We cover the gamut from the early cars, what's referred to as the brass era or the nickel era cars, which are the early 1900s, all the way up to what we call, you know, the future classics class, which is, you know, dream cars and that type of stuff. But we have all kinds of American classes and that type of thing, and it really is, Royce, like you say, I mean, it's a 62. It doesn't seem like it's that far away, but boy, that's almost 50 years ago. And to restore a car like that these days, and it, part of the goal that we find when we put on this show is that people will come up, look at a 62 Rambler, and all those wonderful memories come back to you. And all of us have those memories. I mean, there's some, at some point in our life, a car has made a big impact on us, whether it was your first date or your marriage or, you know, whatever it was. So it's fun to get out there and see those things, and it really brings back a bunch of great memories.
Royce, thanks for your call. We're glad to hear from you. This is Eastern Standard. Our phone number, 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You could do as David did and maybe send us a picture or two of your favorite car if you still have it. I'm going to poke around. I have a picture of an extremely young me with a 65 Corvair that, nice. That I was so proud standing in front of. See if we can find that to post. But and we get enough of these interesting car pictures, we'll post them on a little exhibit on the WEKU Facebook page and our website. We encourage you to get on board, be part of today's program as we talk cars. In a few moments, we're going to talk more about the Keeneland Concours d'Elegance, the 10th anniversary this year. That makes this the 11th event.
Yes.
The 11th Keeneland Concours underway next weekend. Tom and Connie Jones here, and we'd like to hear from you at 800-621-8890. Talking cars on this week's Eastern Standard at WEKU. Thanks for being with us. We have with us in the studio Tom and Connie Jones, who are the perpetrators of the Keeneland Concours d'Elegance. And we're talking to listeners about your favorite car, your first car, a car that was really significant in your life. And we want to talk about the Keeneland Concours in just a moment. But first, let's touch base briefly for a few minutes with Rex from Scott County, who has two cars he'd like to talk about. Rex, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Great show. Enjoy listening to you.
Thanks.
Hey, I wanted just to tell you about two of the cars I've had in my lifetime. One was my first car. It was a 65 Impala Super Sport. Just a beautiful, beautiful car, and I'd love to have it today. And the car that I probably loved the most in my life was a Volkswagen GTI, Golf GTI. It was a 1987. Just like driving a little go-kart, but a fantastic vehicle.
A Golf. You know, what happened to the Rabbit? The Rabbit evolved and became a Golf. Does anybody know why that occurred?
I don't know.
I don't know. No.
I can't tell you, but you're right about the evolution.
Right.
Huh. Interesting. So what? Anything unique about either of those cars that you haven't gotten a chance to tell us about, Rex?
Well, the 65 Impala Supersport, it was just a classy-looking vehicle. It had great lines. It was granddad gold, came with a 327 mm-hmm. factory four-speed bucket seats. It was just dripping in chrome. It was just a good-looking car. And the Golf GTI, I don't even think you could roll that car over. It was just such a fine running machine that I'm just still impressed by it, and I regret selling it.
Fine German engineering. All right.
Yeah.
Very good.
I'm going to get off with other people talk. Great show.
Thanks for calling, Rex. This is Eastern Standard, WEKU, 800-621-8890. And in a few moments, we'll catch up with Dominic from Lexington. We hope you can be patient with us, Dominic, as we talk for a few minutes about the Keeneland Concours d'Elegance. Tom and Connie Jones are the folks behind organizing this event. You guys make any money off the Concours?
We're very blessed to be able to structure this like a business. We treat it with a lot of respect. Nobody gets paid to do this, but we do it for a wonderful cause, and that's the Kentucky Children's Hospital. We've managed to raise, at the end of our 10th year, in the neighborhood of around $625,000 for the Children's Hospital, and we will continue to do our very best to put on a show that, number one, people love to go to. They get wonderful memories and that type of thing, but also to be responsible to what we're doing it for, and that is to raise funds for the Kentucky Children's Hospital and awareness.
Is that common with these concours events? You talk about the origins going back to Paris, France, that is, and the fact that there are other major concours that occur across the U.S. Are they normally fundraisers for a cause of this type?
Yes, they are, actually. Pebble Beach, of course, and Amelia Island. There's some go to the boys' clubs and girls' clubs, and then others to hospitals and various things like that. So, yes, most all of them have a beneficiary.
Where does that money come from? How does attendance or the putting together of this show translate into money that then goes to the hospital? Do people pay an entry fee to participate in the show?
There's several areas that people help support us. And one is through sponsorships. We're so blessed to have many, many sponsors that help us, to put the show on. Individuals pay an admittance fee to get into the show. Just different events that we have, they'll pay a certain price for that, and that's where we raise our funds.
And the participants who bring their cars in, are they doing that out of the kindness of their heart and the love for the vehicles?
They are, and for the love of the cause. We don't charge an entrance fee. These people sometimes come from California, New York, Florida, all over the place. And it's a huge, when the difference between a concours and a car show, for example, is that the stitches per inch in the upholstery is consistent in a concours. Usually in some of the higher ranking cars, the orientation of all the screws are parallel or perpendicular to the chassis, regardless of the torque. It is a level of perfection that you rarely ever get to see, and it takes a huge amount of time and a huge amount of money to get that to that stage. There's also a huge amount of historical research and that type of thing. We have the Mormon Meteor coming, which is a really historically significant automobile that Abe Jenkins drove to for 24 hours at an average of 140 miles an hour in Utah. And ultimately, think of all the questions that you'd have to ask. Was that bolt actually CAD-plated or was it chrome? Is that the right color black? Is it the correct shiny black? What type of leather did they use? How did they stitch it?
Questions some of us would never think of.
Never in a million years. But if you're restoring a car like that back to its original as the designer intended, those are questions that really come to forefront and center.
These people are passionate. They live their lives around these vehicles, I guess, huh?
Borderline crazy.
And you can identify?
I can.
I'm afraid we do.
You all actually own some vehicles like that.
Well, on a much, much lesser scale, but nonetheless, it's you get the chance to play with cars is a lot of fun. Anything that has a computer, I'm totally lost on. So if I have fuel, spark, and air, I can usually get it running.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you talked about sponsorships. As I will disclose once again, the WEKU is one of the media sponsors and has been for the last few years of the Keeneland Concours. And now, for our listeners who donate to the station, there is no WEKU money being spent on that sponsorship. What we do is we provide some promotion. You'll hear some promotional announcements in the next week and a half or so for the Keeneland Concours public service announcements. We're going to do some coverage during the weekend. WEKU's Frank Sundrum is going to produce some feature pieces profiling some of the participants in the Keeneland Concours that you'll be hearing primarily during the day, let's see, Saturday, is that the 19th?
That's the 19th.
Yeah,
yes.
So that is the big day of the show at Keeneland, at the race course.
Yes.
And there's an admission fee charged at the gate for people to get into.
Actually,
and
$15 online beforehand, $20 at the gate.
And that money is, again, going to the
Kentucky Children's Hospital.
Kentucky Children's Hospital.
Yes.
Very good. We're talking Keeneland Concours, but mainly with our listeners, we're talking about cars and want to hear your car stories, your first car, your favorite car. Let's go ahead and talk to a couple more of our listeners, starting with Dominic from Lexington, who has called 800-621-8890. Go right ahead, Dominic.
Yes, hello. This is Dominic in Lexington. And I had the pleasure of meeting Tom and Connie at the Courthouse Car Show a few Fridays ago.
Thank you, Dominic. We remember you.
Yes.
Oh, good.
That's why you mingle. Yes.
Yep. Our kickoff.
This call falls under the category of cars I wish I had kept. When I returned from a year of service in Vietnam with the Army at the end of 1969, I promptly ordered a 1970 Dodge Challenger Special Edition.
Nice.
And it rolled off the truck at the end of January 1970, and it was the most beautiful car I've ever seen.
Was that with a 446 pack?
Oh, no, this was just a 318 V8.
318, got it. Okay, cool.
But
car.
It was kind of the luxury edition, and it had the tan leather seats.
Nice.
And I did get the performance dashboard, and it had a gator grain vinyl roof and the custom road wheels.
Outstanding.
I enjoyed that car for 7 years, put over 100,000 miles on it, and sold it to a Mexican boy in San Diego for $1,000 in 1977.
Wow. But it still puts a great smile on your face and makes your heart nice and warm, doesn't it?
Absolutely my favorite car of all time. And I am still a loyal Mopar and Dodge fan because I've had a number of them. In fact, right now I have a 69 Dodge Dart GTS convertible.
Nice.
Which I hope to park at the show in a few weeks.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And your story, Dominic, makes me think, I wonder if people ever, I'm sure people do, I know, I wonder what became of some of the cars that I once had. Are they in a junk scrap yard somewhere right now? Is somebody still making use of that vehicle? I wonder if anyone has ever run across a car that they perhaps sold, and 20 years later or something, they saw it on the street or saw somebody else making use of it.
I guess it's possible to trace them. I mean, if I would have followed up in California, I think the DMV there, you could trace the license and see, you know, who currently owned the car or whatever.
Well, Dominic, thanks.
But I have no idea what happened to that car, but I wish I had kept it.
I'm thinking the Mexican boy you sold it to, who knows?
He's still smiling.
Oh, yeah. He was delighted. He had never seen such a beautiful car for $1,000.
That's great. You were able to pass it on. Dominic, thank you. Thanks for being part of the show today.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for your support,
Dominic.
I'm enjoying it very much, and we'll see Tom and Connie in a few weeks.
See you on Saturday.
It's all starting about a week from today into next weekend. 800-621-8890 is our phone number at WEKU. Back to Lexington and Zach, who is on the line. Am I correct, Zach? You're talking about something over 100 years old in terms of an older car?
That's correct. It was a here in Lexington. I was in the 60s. I was a kid in high school. I worked in a gas station over on South Broadway. This fellow owned a 1910 Knox. I believe it was a Series D. I think the owner made six, and he was a friend of the owner of the gas station I worked for. And when I got out of the Navy, he still had the car sometime into the 70s. And my friend tried to get me to go over there with my young son and take pictures of this car because it was the only one left, and I didn't. And I can't even find anything on the Internet about it. I do know that when he got too old and had to sell the car, that the guy that bought it about 25 miles from where the car was manufactured. And this was a big car that would cruise down the road like 85 miles an hour. and it was just a beautiful thing. And I was wondering if either they might know about the car, or maybe have seen it, or how I would even find a picture of it.
Or know anything about a Knox in general. Some of us, I've never heard that model, that brand of automobile.
Zach, the Classic Car Club of America does a great job carrying the flame for older cars like that. I would probably start there as a place to, you know, source out that type of thing. But we've actually had a Knox at our show before. I don't know if it was that one or not, but we have an older class that has like a 1906 auto car, a 1907 American Underslung, a 1912 Stutz Bearcat, some really cool old cars of that. Era. And the interesting thing about it, like you said, that's a car that'll do 60 or 70 miles an hour, and that was in an era where there weren't many roads. Those roads were basically still being used by buggies, by horses, by carts, and that type of thing. So what an amazing marvel of technology to be riding your horse down the road and see this thing zipping along at, you know, 50 or 60 miles an hour, making all kinds of loud noises
and hoping a horse hadn't left something
path.
The interesting thing was started this man's career when the car was 3 years old. The original owner, this was he was from Michigan, so I'm assuming that's where the car came from when he bought it. But they were driving it through a field. They didn't have bell housings, and they hit a rock and knocked part of the flywheel off. And so he bought it for $50, and a young guy, and he decided, well, he had to learn how to fix it, and that started his career. I think he came here to UK, maybe in mechanical engineering, I'm not sure that part, but when Lafayette High School had that vocational school there, he taught and retired from there.
Interesting.
And so this thing had a big brass gas tank on the back, and he drove this car to he would always win the awards for the most rare, and he would drive this car to long distances to meets and stuff. And he had a, you know, in Kentucky, the handheld the cutout on that opens the exhaust was illegal, and this thing would really roar when it would open, and he'd go flying down the road and pass a cop, and he would open this thing up and wave, you know.
Fascinating story, Zach. Really glad to hear from you, and taking us back 104 years to the 1910 Knox. This is Eastern Standard. We're really glad to hear from Zach. Let's talk now to Patrick from Owen County. And I think his history includes a Porsche. Is that correct, Patrick?
Yeah, this is Patrick Kennedy. I had the three that got away all before I was 20. One was a 57 Porsche Speedster. It was kind of rough, and I had bought it with a Volkswagen engine in it. It was really cheap, and I tracked the original engine down, and the guy was going to put an airplane, and I bought from him, and I got it back, and I had it installed, but there wasn't much, I'm not too smart. I couldn't get it running. I asked her to sell it. I found that was a trick to get your mother to sell your junk cars. People would believe her. And, he said, yeah, the guy came by, he fiddled with it for 20 minutes and drove it away. And I went, dang.
Patrick, you know what those things are bringing these days?
I'd say over 100.
Yeah, about two and a half to maybe 350.
Whoa.
Well,
yeah.
I bought a 48 Ford wooden station wagon from the Sisters of Notre Dame in 1967 or 68. It had less than 50,000 miles on it.
Only driven to the convent on Sundays, you know.
They went down and got government surplus cheese at the depot. And I was young and stupid, and I drove that about 5 or 6 years. And I was right $100. It's probably worth 10 to times more than that now. But
Patrick, thank you for sharing those stories. We do need to move on because we want to wrap up with Tom and Connie, and I want to apologize to Joe from Corbin. We're not going to be able to get you on the air to talk about your Ford Falcon, your first car, but Tom and Connie Jones are the folks behind the Keeneland Concours d'Elegance. Quick overview of what's happening starting next Thursday, a week from today.
Well, we're just going to have it's about 4 days of celebrating Kentucky, celebrating the automobile, and doing it for a great cause. So on Thursday, we start out with a bourbon tour. On Friday, we have a hangar bash out at the airport. And it's fun to mix. Ultimately, we're just motorheads. So if it's a watch, an airplane, or an automobile, it's all held together with the glue that there's little motors involved. So Friday is the hangar bash. Saturday, all day long, is the Concours d'Elegance out at Keeneland. And we're so blessed to have them as a partner, as a supporter. And we try to make this event as classy and as first-rate as Keeneland is. And then those that are really like to get out and drive their cars, because that's what they were made for, right? Mm-hmm. These things, it is art, but it's also a wonderful way to get around. And on Sunday is the Tour d'Elegance to see places around Kentucky that we don't normally get to see.
And Connie, the money goes to the Children's Hospital.
Yes, Kentucky Children's Hospital.
Tom and Connie Jones, involved with the Keeneland Concours d'Elegance, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Gladly. And by way of disclosure, again, WEKU is a media sponsor of the Concours. That doesn't mean you shouldn't check it out. And you know what? If you're not a gearhead, you don't know anything about cars, you could be like me and just go, that's pretty.
And there's something for everybody.
And there's a lot of memories there, even if you aren't a gearhead.
And awful lot of memories. And, you know, remembering attempts to get a little bit involved and getting the grease under the fingernails. Like, I don't need that. Somebody else can take care of that sort of stuff for me. But, again, thanks for your stories to our listeners, for your stories about your cars. We'll do this again sometime. And also thanks to Katie Frasinelli of the Corvette Museum in Bowling Green for being part of this week's Eastern Standard. Julie Temmel has been on the phones. Richard Turner is the producer of this week's show. At the controls, WEKU's Jonice Franklin, by the way, becoming news director starting Monday, July 14th. We're very grateful that she applied for and accepted that position. Thanks for being with us for Eastern Standard, a production of WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University.